I can just see it now. He's going, oh, please don't make me talk to Mr. Nemo. He makes me come right out and say what I want. I don't want that to really be out there. I can see myself being used as some kind of a tool to shake down people, you know. Let's get Jason to do it. Yeah. We're going to talk. Because I'm going to go, I don't understand what you mean. I don't get this. Bye. Here, talking to Lisa about that. Not that I'm not going to have to develop some skills I don't yet have, but that I am what I am, and that this is a good thing. The roller coaster ride continues in the life of Jason Nemro. But my attitude basically is that I'm going to proceed. Some old working changes we're going to continue with. The first one that comes to mind is taking opportunities. I don't know if it's really taking opportunities. It's more pursuing opportunities. There you go. And number two is, don't worry about making a decision until there's a decision to make. I think I drove Lisa absolutely to distraction by constantly saying to her when she says, Jay, have you prayed about this? Have you prayed about this? And I kept coming back and saying, there's nothing to pray about yet. Oh, well, what about this? What about that? And you go, those aren't the decisions. There isn't a decision to be made yet. It just was a task list. And I don't feel the need to pray about doing a task list. Is there a reason to even make a choice? Doing tasks is a good thing. Every activity has inherent in it practice or learning or growth. These are all good things. Don't need to pray about whether it's a good thing to do or not. A good spending of time. It's not a scarcity issue. It's easy to fall into that trap that it could be, oh, you don't have much time and you need to prioritize, which is fine. Prioritization is necessary. But when there's some goal you're working toward, and there's certain steps that need to be taken to get to that spot, you just do all those steps. Now, it may be frustrating, and I'll grant you, most of my problems have their root in my frustration about a whole string of tasks that I've done that led nowhere. The Shetland process was a whole string of that. Although it did help me to define a lot of things. I think it fed into the whole generalist idea. People were very surprised, those who expressed any opinion at all, were very surprised that I was choosing a degree like anthropology to get a master's in, as opposed to something more technical. I had looked at more technical things. There was a good reason why going to Shetland College, the only master's programs they had were anthropology based. It didn't say anthropology. It was Orkney and Shetland Studies. But for these generalist things pulled from many different disciplines. And that ultimately the ultimate goal would have been, do you want to do archaeology? Do I want to dig around the dirt? And you go, that doesn't that didn't interest me. It was more about learning about people and what people were doing. Of course, I'm a geographical wonk. Love geography. But it's like computers. How would you spend your day? Is that what you want to spend your days doing? Are those sorts of tasks? Geography has really kind of become. And you go, oh, no. That's not how I want to spend my days. No more is it tromping around the wilderness of a transom and a sextant determining where exactly your location is, mapping it, marking it, things like that. That might have been actually sort of interesting, the whole surveying thing. But that's not what a person with a degree in this stuff does. That's what, you know, a trained, that's what a trained person does. I don't want to just slap down and say it's monkey work, but it approaches it. I don't like monkey work. Regardless, I saw the generalist coming out and all that activity. And that's important because it informs me now in what kind of jobs I'm going for. It tends to be more generalist in nature. It tends to be more of a higher level. Going to have people working under me that will actually do the work, and I will provide more, not really supervision, but more of a thought in the direction behind it. The jobs I've had up to now have been fine because I mostly melded both roles. I was the person doing the planning and the execution. And as you progress, you get other people to do the execution, and you do more of the planning. More of the brains behind the operation. Which is what I hope to be. Hope I can do that decently. and that would be just embarrassing. Don't want to engage the Peter principle here. But I've worked myself right up to a point where I have no business being. Right now I'm a technician. Or I became a technician. Went from being an analyst, an associate analyst, to a technician. And it was a definite drop in status. And it's time to get on past that. Other things. Even if it's one of the jobs at Eastern. I think that was an engineer job. Or the job at Masonland. The biggest thing is they both need to be professional level. Needs to be salaried work. And that'll be the determining factor. The work I do now, or did do, had some planning and more execution. It's time to switch those to more planning, less execution. I find myself a little more energized about the Masonland job, strangely enough, the one that doesn't compel me to move. It might buy a new lease on life for staying in Tucumcari for a little bit longer. Which would make everybody here far happier. At least I think it would. And still be a mix. I would still be doing things along with the bigger picture stuff. I've always been a bigger picture guy. I think anybody who's known me for any time at all, Lisa, the best example of it, would say, cool, Jay's a big picture guy. Including the whole concept of, for instance, just this week, or this weekend, we're trying to arrange what might work for coordinating my meetings in Amarillo and Josh needing to go off to basketball games. We left a little early for me, drove off to San Jose. Anyway, for the whole coordination thing, he has a friend named Adam. I've been corrected enough, but now I think I've got it down. Adam's invited him over 1,000 times to his house to, like, play Xbox and stuff. Things that typical kids have that my kids just don't have. We just never put out the money for it, and I have no intention of ever really doing it. It's not a question of poverty. It's a question of, there's other things to do in life. And that this constitutes no real skill in my world. Lisa's in agreement. So we're good. I called Adam out, and everybody jumped on me for it. And I was upset. I said, who cares? I was looking at the big picture, the coordination issue. They were all weird about, oh, let's make sure we say this guy's name right. I'm not saying it's not important, but it wouldn't hurt his feelings if I got his name wrong. But it's just the realm I work in. I'm a big picture guy. Getting people's names right is not, immediately the goal needing to be accomplished. So, there's an example. What's another example that popped in my mind? The Disney movie, The Great Mouse Detective. I pull my insight and my inspiration from a wide variety of interesting sources. Hopefully this one isn't so dated and so obscure that people go, huh, a lot. There's a little mouse named Basil of Baker Street, as far as I recall. And this little girl mouse's father has been tied up with this conspiracy. We can drop the mouse stuff. It's just his anthropomorphism. They're essentially people. They could never get the last name right. But it wasn't for a lack of having the capacity. It was just not germane to where his mind worked. And I think that's where teamwork comes in. When people talk about teamwork, I don't know if I just never could describe it very well before, because I've always been kind of a one-man shop. Teamwork has to do with a common goal among us, and a dedication to that common goal, making sure everything is handled and getting there. It can't be done by one person. One person will invariably forget one aspect or another of these things. In that team, by nature, there are going to be a whole range of skills, a whole range of abilities, a whole range of what one person will do better than another. And the essential element of being a team is to determine who should have what role, who should be doing what task, what is best suited to one of the other. So as part of team building, you have to understand, or you have to figure out what skills you have and how you're going to use them. Now, typically these things kind of shake down without a whole lot of, you know, planning. Sorry, not you know. People tend to gravitate toward a role for which, number one, they feel comfortable, number two, they feel competent. Now, on some teams, it's important to push outside of both of those. They need to push you beyond your comfort and beyond your competency so that you can become more, better, develop a little bit. Important things. And then any team building activity, you want a little bit of that. You don't want failure, but you want some stretching. It's good to take on something a little larger than yourself. You know, dang it. Still trying to kill off the, you know. Stretch a little, don't stretch a lot. End up breaking people. You start getting the Steve Jobs effect, which is ripping people to shreds, tearing them apart. You get interesting people out of that. People that can't stay around too long. Because the work thrown in front of you is typically too intense. And I think it struggled on the letting up. I don't know how it was. Like, I've only heard anecdotal evidence of Steve Jobs' management style. I hear that it was burnout heaven. He was always being complained about. A lot of the complaints were buried under rich rewards. I'm not leaving Apple because, heck, I make the high six figures. He runs me hard, but he compensates me well. And it means that there was a certain kind of people there. And I think after Steve Jobs' death now, and the changing of the corporate culture, is going to be interesting to watch. We're already seeing some interesting stuff out of it. That Apple's starting to slow down. That the real energy, the real pushing was Steve Jobs himself. And that, like any given individual that worked at Apple previously, who was likely to say, I worked here for 10 years, and now they're taking the riches that they made, stock options, all that sort of thing, now they live very secluded, relaxing lives, because they chewed up probably 20 years of life in 10 years, burning the candle at both ends. To please Steve Jobs. He died young. Not surprising. Seems like the type that would have. Certainly a blaze of glory sort of a man. That seems incongruous to his interesting background. He was kind of a hippie, sort of a kid. I don't know if he ever found himself. The fact that he's wanted today is this amazing chief executive officer, I think, is patently silly. Now, the corporate world does one thing well, and that is it showers money on success. Steve Jobs was just willing to do whatever it took to get success. He was a bit of a manifest destiny sort of fella. Had a picture in his mind of what he wanted, and he drove everybody around him to doing that. I don't even know if it was really a matter of conversion more than it was weeding out of those who were not willing to sign on. I don't know how on earth I wandered into Steve Jobs. Because he wasn't really a... Well, no, he was a big picture guy. And a tireless worker for that big picture. And I think he had a sense for probably his biggest ability was his sense for, I don't think what people wanted, I think for more being or creating cultural icons. I don't know that he himself was much of a cultural icon. There wasn't a lot of people wanting to be Steve Jobs. But he seemed to have this ability, almost like magic, to make things cultural icons. Which I think is the opposite of figuring out what people want. I don't think that's what Steve Jobs did at all. And so many pundits say that was the success of the iPad or the iPhone or stuff like that. And I don't agree. I don't think these were focus grouped. To a large degree, it was simply you can't call it a personification, a manifestation of what Steve Jobs thought was was what he had vision in his head. It's almost like he could see the future. which means that my take on the future of Apple is Apple's going to decline. Because their guru, for lack of a better term, is gone. And they will not find another guru. Perhaps they will. I doubt it. Although I think the search will go on. The fact that corporate types now kind of hold sway over Apple is telling. The first great fall of Apple was precipitated when Steve Jobs was forced out by Gil Amelio. Or at least that's the way it's portrayed sometimes. I can imagine that it's somewhere deep in the bowels of the Apple campus. There are day and night seances going on, trying to access the spirit of Steve Jobs so that they can know what to do next. Because that's what I think was really happening. Anyway, Steve Jobs is a big picture guy, somewhat, but he also got into the guts of it, mostly to scream at the guts when they weren't producing what he wanted to see quickly enough. I think that was basically the interface. The whole point was to bring Steve Jobs prototypes, whether it was just a mock-up, whether you had the thing in your hand. And he told you what he wanted. And when you brought something to him, if it wasn't what he wanted, I think the tendency was to throw it at you and to scream at you and tell you, you know, whatever, you're stupid or whatever. It was not all of the management books that tell you how to deal with people. I don't think Steve Jobs had any interest in those, nor did he ever read them, I'm sure. He would have been much more likely to study the art of war, seeing more of something that Steve Jobs would have found his inspiration from, or from some of the more pragmatic philosophers. Steve Jobs was, in my estimation, not an ethical person. That your own personal take on things was more important than some kind of universal ethic. Indicated by the fact that you got this fella who, when he was young, was searching for a spiritual center, and I don't know if it ever really ended, that search, but I think he found himself, and he found himself worshiping at the altar of the god of commerce, and found out that there was an open field. An open field of people who were willing to pay homage to a god of stuff and their sacrament was the handing over of a lot of money. And I believe that's what he learned early on. is kind of a melding of religion and commerce. So when people say, well, let's duplicate what Apple did, and people look at you funny and go, there's no duplication of what he did. Said he was following a muse or a demon, one or the other. If you want to follow in Steve Jobs' footsteps, you need to spend 10 years in India sitting under swamis. And you still won't come out with a Steve Jobs. Because my own personal ethics won't take me there. I can't be Steve Jobs. Here's better. It's not a can't. I won't allow myself to become a Steve Jobs. How about that? Not to say that I have the capability. You cannot dismiss the capacity of Steve Jobs. It was amazing what he was capable of doing and what he did, what he got other people to do by whatever methodology he got it done. And so, yeah, will we ever see the like of Steve Jobs again? My thought is, I hope not. I hope not. I don't think Steve Jobs could ever be much of a friend to anybody. I believe every relationship he got into would always be twisted into how can this accomplish Steve Jobs' goals. I'm not going to sit here and try to analyze the ethics behind that. I think the first thing that Steve Jobs would tell you on the matter of ethics is one makes their own ethics. And there's a certain power in that. When you finally sit down and you say, I can create my own religion that answers to me alone. And there are thousands and thousands, millions of people who are rudderless, don't have any sense for where they fit in, where these things are supposed to lead to, and that is from those people that you form your followers, your disciples. And it's just with Steve Jobs, you had levels of discipleship. The first level is always buying his products. And I've always said, I tend to avoid Apple products. I've never bought an Apple product. Said because, on some level, inherent in them is a religion. A kind of us versus them sort of thing. And on an economic level, on every level, I'm a Mormon. We don't have icons to be worshipped. Steve Jobs is the icon of Apple Corporation. But when it comes to computers, I'm a bit, I'm an agnostic, I'm cheap. I am ascetic and I'm cheap. So I tend to gravitate toward Linux. Is it a religious thing? No. Because there's some things that Linux simply doesn't do well. But that's also because it's just a hodgepodge. It's like evangelical beliefs. It's a hodgepodge. It fits into this little framework, or doesn't. The framework isn't very set. People have tried to develop frameworks, and it's... And you find that those who become more successful, more... get more of the limelight, the first step in doing that is to deviate from the framework. Although I do have to say I do have something of a religious attachment. No, not really. To the BSD license. I like the BSD license and I like more than GPL. Whenever I see GPL, I kind of go, oh, dang it. I mean, you still use it. But not with the kind of enthusiasm that you use the BSD sort of licenses. I'm a licensing wonk. I like the public domain. I like that level of freedom. BSD's really close for just being anybody can use it however they want to as long as you put the copyright on it. Regardless, so... I don't remember how I only got Steve Jobs when... Well, these blocks bring out the most interesting thing of all. I think the most important thing they do is that I talk and I think and I... Maybe more than anything else, study my speech. Try to drop off... ways of speech that might be detrimental. Trying to drop off the, you knows. Once I get that nailed down, or mostly worked out so that it's not so obvious, I can work on some other things, perhaps. All that brings to mind what I was trying to do. I'm going to put a lot of effort into learning Morse code. I think that would be a good lead-in to oh, how would you say it? Language, study language skill. Morse code has at least some of the elements of learning another language. And Number one, it's a good skill to have, period. I like it on that level. It's concise. It cuts through static. Excellent, excellent thing to have. So, while I'm working on other projects, or not working on them, I can't say I've really written an essay lately. At least in the last couple of, in the last week or so. work on that. Yeah, I can do a little essay about the Steve Jobs religion. Because I always did. I always struggled with decision making, his decision making on a certain level. There was whole technologies other people liked fine, but that Steve Jobs just said, no, get rid of it. We're not doing that anymore. And it's like, oh, okay. It almost seemed kind of haphazard. I really believe he was following his own personal track. And I don't really know what he was being led by. I think at some point he figured out that money needed to be the sacrament of his religion, the religion he was building. And do I think Steve Jobs is a good person? No, I don't. Would I have worked for him very long? No, I wouldn't have. I know people that could. I could look at it simply as a job, working for Apple. I don't think he would go very far. I think he couldn't work there long without getting into the oblation part of it. So, maybe I could do an essay on that. But primary effort here for a little bit needs to be, and it needs to be done in pretty short order, is to get down Morse code and to get some proficiency in it. Don't need to be a god of it. Just, I think it would build skills and experience that will be needed later when I'm having to learn a language that's different from the one I'm accustomed to. I don't know how much Morse code does that, but it's got to help on a certain level. Especially if you take it in the way that a lot of people do, or a lot of people say that you'll be most successful. There's people who don't write down what's being sent at all. They just, it's just words. Who knows? They may dream in Morse code. And that's one of the aspects of this work, of what I've heard from people. You know, you don't. Sorry, guy said twice in a row. Oh, it was okay for you to say, you know, it was actually a good place to put that. You know when you have a good grasp of a language, when you dream in it. Missionaries have a sense for this, because at some point, whether it's 6 months in or a year in, that's what happens to them. That's when they know that they've pretty much gotten it, is that they dream it. Sometimes they find it difficult to translate things back to English. They don't even try to say, well, there's really not a concept of that in English. That's when you know you've kind of gotten it pulled together. So, let's see what happens. Bring it down the examples of Morse code, how it sounds, what it looks like, and I think those kinds of activities, those kinds of skills, will come in very handy later on, like I was saying before. Oh, that's looking at the day's activities. Keep me busy, out of trouble. Occasional thing popping in. I guess you know when a job needs to come to an end is when actually doing your job is a little annoying. And it gets that way for me when I'm in the middle of one of my projects. But actually doing the job is a distraction. So it's time to change out. All the beauties of having a job that actually is what you're up to. Of course, my problem is that I'm a project guy of my own age, and I don't think most of the projects I'm up to generate money. But we'll see. You never know what God has in mind for you. Knowing you. So, I'm really working. Well, I'd really like to get to the point to where I can be a little more I think this is my family. Oh yeah, this buddy family. They're wonderful. I like them. All right. My biggest trial right now is reconciling myself to somebody else knowing better what I'm supposed to be doing, what I'm supposed to be about, and accepting that fact. Oh, I struggle with it terribly. It's hard. And boy, if I get this job with the Foreign Service, even more tricky, because That's definitely having somebody else, to a large degree, run your life. Figuring out about you, where you can best be utilized. Going through lots and lots of testing and evaluation. Number one, to figure out if this is the right placement for you, or if you should even be in it at all. You know, there's plenty of, sorry, not, you know, there's all kinds of tests run ahead of time. And that is the essence of, I think, the system. And people get confused because they go, I don't really know what they're looking for. And they go, they're looking for a type of person, not what you do or what you know, as much as maybe the sort of person that you are. And it's difficult to know what that is. The kind of masters of the universe sort of take, I think, in a way, on things, and I don't know exactly how you ascertain that. I think after watching the documentary The American Ruling Class, I think the diplomatic service contributes to that sort of a thing. There are different tracks already in the Foreign Service. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a few unspoken ones that manifest themselves during your career. There's a lot of career diplomats that go one way or another. I think there is also a Masters of the Universe track, and those become your higher level ambassadors. They get stuck into more generalized parts of government. I look at it as the poor man. That's me. The poor man's track to this. That the evaluating, and I can't, it's difficult to call it the culling, but the assorting of people into different tracks, I think, continues far beyond what's stated. And that it's from these kinds of grounds that those who get great power come. Well, one of the ways, you know. The other ways are more obvious, you know. You come from a certain family, have a certain socioeconomic status. You go to certain colleges. That's definitely a way to do it, too. But not the only way. America's quite interested and I think enjoys, to a certain extent, finding talents in unlikely places. So this may be how it does that. I get that impression from just thinking about it, that there's a lot of that going on. That you're always, always being tested. That the test never ends. And you have to get kind of accustomed to being tested all the time. But that's okay. For the LDS mind, this entire life is a test to see what kind of a person you're going to be, what you're going to rise to, what your capabilities are, things like that. It's all God's termination program. It's not that everybody else is a loser. It's just determining, one or anything else, who's going to win. So, so let's start that journey. Not that we've just started. I mean, it's been going on for a long time, but let's continue it. Okay, well, that's all.